The following is a production of the Sharon Historical Society and Museum, Audio History. It's an interview that Christine Beer, the executive director, did with Ed Kirby, Sharon resident.
This is Christine Beer sitting with Ed Kirby, a local historian, regional historian, educator in Sharon and across the U.S. We're talking today about a different kind of growing up. Ed was raised in part on the Emily Winthrop Miles estate. So, Ed, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Anything you'd like to add to your introduction?
No, I think you covered it.
How you want to be known, how you want to be remembered, how you are known. So let's just start. You mentioned this theme of a different kind of growing up as something that resonates with you, and so I picked up on that and prepared a number of questions I thought we could talk about. The first one is, in Seldom Told Tales, Book 2, which you authored in 2008, it has a very personal and historically dense narrative, and the chapter on Sharon's Winthrop woman includes quite a few story threads about the evolution of Neverland and your experiences there. Do you remember a time when you first realized you were experiencing or had experienced a different kind of growing up?
Not really. In the beginning, I remember we were on a farm. I remember looking out the window and seeing the cows come out of the building that we were actually living in, which is still standing. And the barn was downstairs, and we were in a small apartment upstairs. And I don't think I thought that was any different than anything else, except that there weren't many, any, I should say, kids around, except for me at that particular point. So I think after I grew up a little bit more, I began to realize that there actually were kids. I had cousins that were all up in Lenox, where my dad came from, Lenox, Massachusetts. And I'd see them frequently, but there was nobody at the farm when I was 3 and 4 years old, except for me and then later my sister.
So how did your sense of isolation change, if at all, when you were sent away to boarding school so young and then refused to go back and then went on to be a student of the Sharon School?
Well, Emily Winthrop Miles thought I should go to a boarding school. And so I went when I was 5 years old to a boarding school in Richmond, Massachusetts, the same one that her two nephews went to. One, Tom Morris, was a year older than me, and Bob Morris was just a little bit younger than me. So I knew them well, and I liked being with the kids at that school. We had a good time there, except I missed being at home. And as is stated in the book, by the time I got to the third year, I decided I didn't want to go back, so I refused to go back, and so I started out at Sharon Center School. And I think I was in a class then probably of about 25 students or so, and got to know all of them very well. Interesting thing in those days in the public schools, if you didn't do well, I don't know whether it's pass or not, you stayed back. So by the time we got to fourth grade, we had quite a range of kids from sometimes 3 years older down to my age. So I got to know quite an extension of other students in that way.
It must have been quite a contrast.
Yeah, it was.
From the boarding school to Sharon Center.
Yes, it was quite a contrast.
In so many ways.
And boarding school was quite formal, and much more formal than the elementary school. I remember a few times I didn't eat fast enough, so they put me in a corner facing the wall. I had to eat by myself, so I learned to eat more quickly that way.
At which school? At the boarding school?
At the boarding school.
So you felt less constrained at Sharon?
Excuse me?
You felt less constrained in the Sharon school?
Yeah, I think I did. And the first day of class, I wasn't too restrained. In a whole new situation in the second grade, one of the girls in the class was chewing gum, and the teacher called her up to the front of the room, took her over her knee, and spanked her. I behaved very well for the rest of that year.
Did you miss the boarding school ever? Were you always?
I missed some of the people that that were there. They had a real good hill for sliding. That I had my first flexible flyer on, and I missed that. But we have plenty of hills around here, so Sharon is well hilled, and you could slide on the town roads because they usually didn't get sanded, and so they were nice and icy in many cases. Not good for cars, but good for sleds.
What did you do to adjust when you left the boarding school and you joined Sharon Center School with this range of ages and backgrounds of different children? Who were the ones that you connected with? What did you?
Probably the ones that were more my age. I think there were about five of us that are pretty much the same age, in the age we were supposed to be, and. I went through with those students all the way through high school. I went to Housatonic Valley Regional High School after Sharon Center School and was graduated there.
So that must have been a really stable period. That sounds like a stable period of time after probably a pretty significant disruption going away. Did you think back?
I don't know. I don't know if the disruption was significant. It was just I liked it. I liked it on the farm. I liked the animals, and then as I grew up a little bit more, tramping through the woods was always. I always liked the woods and the old roads, and I was sort of fascinated by those things.
You've spoken about Sunday walks in the mountains of Sharon with your father, E.J. Kirby. And of different stories about those walks. For example, a time when your father called Corey Miles for a ride back to Neverland. When you stayed out too late.
And most people don't even know the road is there these days, but right across from Emily Stonehouse, the field across the road from there, there's an old charcoaling road that goes up to the mountain, or the rest of the mountain, because we're already in the mountain. And we hiked that all the way up to the clay beds, and then went beyond the clay beds, and which the clay bedding was a big industry until about 1919. That was the last of the industries to close. And then we hiked down and came out on one of the farms right near, just south of where the Housatonic Valley Regional High School is now. Except it was late afternoon by then, and hiking back over the mountain or even down Route 7 and up West Cornwall Road. So there was an open garage there. We stopped in, and Dad called Corey Miles, and Corey came and picked us up and took us back home again. That was one of our longest hikes. One of the things that always interested me about it was part of my interest in the iron business was that the land that Emily bought first, the first parts of it, when she purchased it in 1926, included the parts of land owned by the Barnum Richardson Company, which is an iron company, and the Lime Rock Iron Company, and all for charcoal. And on the uphill sides of the pond in both directions, both her property and the state, there's still about 200 charcoal beds left in that area. So that was a big producer of charcoal.
How did you learn about this? Did your father teach you, or did you discover together as you walked around the mountains?
My father was a teamster in Lenox, and I think when he was about 18 or 19, Richmond furnace was still open, and he hauled wood in for the charcoal kilns at the furnace for a couple of years. So he knew the charcoal business, and my great-grandfather, John Lawton, came over from Ireland, and he was 14. They put him underground in the mines in Litchfield digging for for iron ore 10 hours a day, but he gradually worked himself up and worked at the furnace, and so I got a pretty good background in that from my family.
How did you get an interest in geology? You became really involved in the geological history here.
I think my interest is sort of in the geomorphology. In other words, how did it get that way? How did things form? The glacial periods really interested me, and the various types of rocks that we found around here. And I was interested in that in the service, and spent some time in doing a little bit of mountain climbing in Japan while I was there, and so it just sort of built up through the years. But I always spent a lot of time in the woods, and there's a lot of rocks around here, so once hooked on that, it never goes away.
How often did you feel like the need to take your bike into town or get off of the Winthrop property and get into town? I imagine it was an effort to do that.
Yeah, it was an effort. You had to go over the highest point and then down. The hardest part usually was coming back home again, coming up the hill. But my dad got my first bicycle from Horace Williams, and Horace lived down the corner of Williams Road and Cawkinstown Road. He swapped two small pigs, for the bicycle. It was a 28-inch bicycle, one speed, and those are tough on hills, especially when you're not very big. But I learned to ride on that and use it for a lot of years. And I would often ride down the town, especially in the summertime. We played ball at the old Adams Field, which was off of Route 41, which is no longer there. It was a farm field, and it was a field with the Sharon team in the Interstate Baseball League for years, until Veterans Field was built down Sharon Valley after World War II.
So you got around on that bike for quite a while?
Yeah, and occasionally we got rides. Somebody would pick us up, and if I had a game, my dad would usually come down and pick me up after the game, put the bicycle in the pickup truck, and then drive me home.
It sounds like you had a lot of people you could rely on, even though you were away from town.
Yeah, and one of my favorites was Martin Cogswell, who was a Teamster, a black man, great old guy, and I used to work with him a lot doing haying, and I think in one of my books I told the story of one morning we went out to load the loose hay. We didn't have any pickup material or anything like that, the loose hay in the wagon, and Martin lifted up one big bunch of hay on his fork, and a rattlesnake dropped out. We cleared out of that area very quickly.
You mentioned that in the sixth grade you heard someone remark, "Oh, Kirby, he's the kid with the naked statues in his garden." You've also mentioned that your father directed you to stay away from the cabin. So in different stages of your life, what intrigued you most about being on Neverland around Emily's sculptures and the processes that she had for creating her artistic works?
Well, she was a fascinating woman, and obviously very fond of me as a kid growing up. And so I sort of had free run of almost everything. The story about staying away from the cabin when she would have her models, who were mostly dancers, because she was told earlier in her career to not use just regular models, but to use dancers, because they would have much better sense of balance in poses that they had to hold. But they would be in her studio, which was in the same building, the old farm building that we lived in, and at lunchtime, they would break and then all go over to her little cabin in the woods, and apparently they sunbathed there while they were enjoying their lunch, and I was told by my dad, "No, you don't go over there during lunchtime."
So what did you say to your classmates that made these comments?
Well, I think it was we lived about 4 miles out of town, and there was hardly any traffic on that road in those days. In fact, if we heard a car go by, everybody stopped and looked to see who it was. And none of the roads were paved. And apparently one of my buddies, I've forgotten his name now, but I remember him well, he said, somebody made some reference to me, and he says, "Oh, Kirby's the kid with the naked statues in his garden." And of course, they weren't my statues, and it wasn't my garden, but he knew that I lived on the estate, so... I guess I had that bit of a reputation. I think he was jealous.
Was there an aspect of Emily's work that particularly draws you? I know you've pointed out to me the sculptures, her poetry, her furniture designs.
I was always in later years. I think I was more impressed with very impressed with the poetry and things because of the kinds of things she was saying, and she wrote very well. But as a kid, somebody being able to build a statue 8 feet tall and with her hands working plasticine, which is not easy stuff to work with. That's a particular type of clay that she used. And she had very long, gracious hands, and they were very strong because that's tough stuff to work. And I look at some of those statues. The largest one was aluminum casting that was in the New York 1939-40 World's Fair in the American Building. And that always impressed me just by the size of it itself. The one I liked best was the one that we have a picture of here of the Huntress, the girl with the spear. And I knew most of those people too, the girls and the guys that were that served as models, because I got to know them. They were around. They'd stay at the place usually overnight at her house and things like that when she was working with them.
How many people would be there, even when you didn't have guests?
Well, let's see.
About.
Yeah, Dad had. Let's see. He had two guys in the horse barn and two in the cow barn, one in the horse barn, and he worked in the horse barn as well, and usually one other working in the fields, and there was another family that lived in the so-called helps part of the main house. And then there was another family that lived in the cottage that was across the road that's no longer there. So I guess if you had the domestic help and everything else, it was probably total of about a dozen people altogether.
It sounds lively. Yeah. Especially, and then with Emily's household and her guests and the dancers. And...
Yeah, but she if she had a production, one of the things that she would have in the hay barn after most of the hay was gone and the new cutting hadn't gone in yet, was she had modern dance programs in there. And that would draw people from the Lenox area and from New York City. I always liked that because they'd come down in their big cars and the chauffeurs were all good-natured guys. They didn't have anything else to do. So my sister and I were getting back in one of the cars and pick up the telephone and talk to the chauffeur in the front seat of the car, like we were a really big type. So it was a different, most kids don't grow up that way. Mm-mm. But I also, we had a dog kennel, and she was big on all sorts of animals, but we had 65 dogs all together. Probably most of them were dachshunds, but others as well, and did breeding there, and they had some great dogs. My first job was help taking care of that kennel, which is, I think I made 10 cents a day or something like that. So I wasn't overpaid, I don't think. And then working with, actually on the farm when I got a little bit bigger, working with the tractors and and the doing milking and that type of thing. And then in later years, when World War II hit, it was much harder to get help because it wasn't an essential farm. In other words, they weren't selling milk and providing food. Anything that she had, she gave away. I mean, that wasn't their purpose in the farm. And so we went to Anglo-Egyptian goats, and we had those for years. So I was the main person taking care of the goats for lots of years.
Well,
we also had about 45 pigs and 11 horses, 22 cows, plus two bulls, one named Cashmere Bouquet, and Corey Miles, on the other hand, was he bought the North Canaan Airport, and he leased it first, and he bought it, I think, in 1930, so he was in the flying business, and they gave lessons, and did parachute jumps and a lot of things like that, and he was a very good pilot himself. And he and my dad had been good friends in Lenox before. He was Mrs. Miles' chauffeur before they eloped, and so they sort of lived different lives, even though they were together for dinner every night. He'd be home by 7 for dinner, and he left 7 in the morning. So,
what a different kind of growing up. Thanks for talking this morning, and we'll have more conversations like this. Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you.
The preceding was a production of the Sharon Historical Society and Museum, located at 18 Main Street in Sharon. The audio history interview was with Ed Kirby. More information is available at sharonhist.org.